This is the At Savannah Opinion Commute Podcast, presented by National Office. Friday is here, that one glorious day each week where the Commute Podcast focuses in on the biggest challenges facing the Savannah community and how we can address them. I'm Adam Van Bermer, the Commute's host and the editorial page editor of the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. Since it's Beacon Friday, I'm making just a cameo here, and the Beacon Project's lead reporter, Amy Conning, will soon box me out of hosting duties for the day. Now, what is the Beacon Project? The Savannah Morning News launched Beacon in April with a magazine product dedicated exclusively to discussions about the Savannah area's biggest challenges. The first two topics have been infrastructure, more recently, affordable housing. Amy is joined for today's episode by someone with insights on both issues, urban planner Denise Grabowski. Before I throw it over to Amy and Denise, let's do the National Office Systems ad. The Commute's presenting sponsor offers great office design services. And while the word national is in their name, they are a local company. This Savannah business has been providing beautiful, functional, and comfortable workplaces for going on 35 years. National Office Systems is the exclusive local provider of Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Office Furniture. Learn more at natoffsys, that's natoffsys.com. Now, Amy Condon and Denise Grabowski, take it away.
Hi, welcome to the Beacon Podcast on the Friday Commute. I'm your host, Amy Condon. Funny story for this week. As we were working on the issues 1 and 2 of Beacon, the first focusing on infrastructure and the second on affordable housing, a single name kept coming up in our research, Denise Grabowski, the founder of the urban planning firm Symbiosity. She serves on the Tide to Town Urban Trail Board of Directors, was the principal for the Victory Drive Corridor Study, was a community participant for the Savannah Economic Development Authority's Propel Savannah Study, served on the committee that wrote the report to remove the I-16 overpass into downtown Savannah, and on the team for the Savannah Development and Renewal Authority's 2033 Master Plan. There were times, actually, that I thought, here, let me let Denise write the entire issue, because you are, in your role, offering up some really important ideas to help shape a more equitable Savannah by design. So thank you, Denise, for joining me here in the studio today.
And thank you for having me.
So exactly, there is so much to talk about. But I want to sort of first set some context, because as a city planner, you see firsthand how a city's design both enables and constricts connectivity and what that can have as social implications. And there is so much praise for Savannah's nearly 300-year-old Oglethorpe plan, which is deserved in many respects, but what has occurred in those intervening years that sort of challenges Savannah's connectivity and prosperity that you've seen in your role?
Well, you're absolutely right that the way our communities are designed influences the choices that we make every day in our lives because of the physical design of the community. And the same can be said for policy as well. And downtown Savannah, of course, was built and designed many, many years ago, long before we thought about land use regulations and zoning. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the good intentions of land use regulations have gotten us into a lot of areas of concern today. Fortunately, we have finally passed NUZO here in Savannah, which is a huge victory to be able to improve our land use regulations so that we can really get back to designing our community in a way that facilitates movement in many different ways and facilitates mixed use. But in the interim, you know, many of the fabulous urban design principles that we would see reflected in downtown and many of our older neighborhoods that were built in the early 1900s, those planning principles unfortunately got lost as development in Savannah continued to grow and expand. And we went from very small walkable blocks to super blocks, which are absolutely not at all conducive to pedestrians or to bike traffic at all. They're only designed for cars. And when we have a community like that, it takes away choice of how people can move around and get about town.
And it also changes affordability.
Absolutely.
As well as the connectivity of historic neighborhoods to job centers.
And, absolutely.
And things like that. What purpose? So when we hear phrases like master plan or strategic action plan or comprehensive plan, how do those different pieces fit together to create an entire vision for a community?
It's very complicated.
So this is master planning 101.
You're right.
Because it can be, I can imagine as just a citizen, mm-hmm. when you hear all these different plans, you're not even sure what's the difference between a vision, a comprehensive plan, a master plan, that there's multiple master plans for one area or mm-hmm. multiple master plans that fit together. So how do we make that easy for people to see how they fit into those processes?
You are absolutely right. There's many layers and there's not one clear answer. A lot of times that's because the plan is dependent on the scope of what you're planning for. But one analogy that I think can kind of be helpful is if you think about your house and say you're building a new house, you start with a vision for what you want that house to be. And then you work with someone to help design that house. And you say, it's going to have this many rooms and it's going to be laid out like this. And then you start getting into the actual plan development and you find out there are some things that you can't do but the way you wanted to because of financial reasons or because you don't have the space, whatever reasons those may be. Then you get your house built. And then you have to figure out how you want to decorate each room. So then you come up with a plan for the room. You have to decide how you want to lay out your yard. You come up with a plan for your yard. So many of these plans start at a very high level, and then they get more nuanced as you step into more focused areas. So a comprehensive plan should be something that's a plan for the entire community that sets forth this vision. And then you might get into more specific areas where you have a master plan that starts to drill down at a finer grain detail. The other thing I think is important to think about are the elements of design and policy. Design and policy should work together, but unfortunately, they're not always talked about in the same conversation. And when you have a disconnect between design and policy, it can be very problematic and it leads to issues. So you may have a policy that you want to have, like for example, right now, the city of Savannah has a complete streets policy. We want to have walkable streets that reflect the character of the area, mm-hmm. but we don't have the design guideline to go with it. And so we need the design piece that articulates how that policy is carried out. Now, that's a very physical, tangible example, but that's just one way to think about how, the different layers of plans have to work together. And then there's the policy piece and how that influences the design piece, because the character of the community really is reflected tangibly through the design.
But it's enacted through policy.
Oftentimes, yes.
So how do we improve that connectivity between design and policy?
Well, I think when we're talking about, urban design and community design, that's why it's so important that our regulations speak to design. Historically, zoning codes have really been focused on use, mm-hmm. with very little attention to urban form and to design. And that's where we've gotten ourselves into a whole lot of trouble. If you think about downtown Savannah, one of the things that makes it work so well is you can have a building that over its lifespan may have had a dozen different uses. Mm-hmm. And all of these uses work just fine because they conform to the physical design of the building that they're in. But what's driving the character of that area more so than the use is the urban form of the building. So we have to think about how our land use regulations and our urban design policies fit together and make sure that we are having the conversations and the understanding of urban design in our community, because we are so, we are recognized worldwide for the beautiful urban design of our downtown, but yet we completely lost sight of that in so many other areas of our community.
Mm-hmm. Does the NUZO go far enough then to help bridge that, or is it just sort of one step toward that?
I think it's definitely a step in a positive direction, mm-hmm. And it helps to address many of the most urgent needs. For example, the onerous number of zoning districts that we had before. So it definitely is a step in the right direction. It'd be great to continue to see it evolve, mm-hmm. and policies should continue to evolve and change with the times. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. Would love to see it continue a little bit further. And I think we can do that. I think it gives us a framework to be able to do that.
Sorry to break in here on Amy and Denise, but we need to speak a moment about Freedom Boat Club. The weekend is oh so close to being here, and the weather forecast looks quite pleasant, perfect for a boat trip. Whether it's to the beach at Wausau, the sandbar at Tybee, Sharktooth Island in the River Channel, or your favorite fishing drop, there's joy in every trip along our waterways. Freedom is the easiest way to get on the water. With Freedom, you buy a membership, not a boat. You pay a monthly fee, and for any gas that you burn while on the water, while they handle everything else, storage, cleaning, maintenance, insurance, mobile repair and towing, everything. To learn more, contact Steve Sherman at 912-226-2617 or visit freedomboatclub.com and complete the information request form. Mention this podcast and receive a free hat and t-shirt combo. Again, that phone number is 912-226-2617 and the website is freedomboatclub.com. Freedom Boat Club, get on the water today.
Now, you've done a lot of work with the Savannah Downtown Redevelopment Authority's 23 plan, which actually took on a pretty Herculean effort of saying, okay, there's over time, there's been all of these plans done, mm-hmm. master plans, visionary plans, all of these things. Mm-hmm. Let's bring them all together. Mm-hmm. Instead of these being plans that sit on a shelf, let's bring them all together and see where they overlapped and what great ideas they had in them. And then where do we fill in those gaps to have a plan for who we're going to be in 14 years? Mm-hmm. And you just did a presentation before the city council about this plan.
Right, right.
What kind of ideas are coming out of that plan that you think have traction? Well, that might do some of these things that you're talking about with urban form mm-hmm. and policy setting.
The thing that's really exciting is a lot of what's in that plan, we are seeing move forward. So there was an entire chapter in the 2033 plan that talks about the need for adoption of NUSO. That's happened. There's recommendations in there for the removal of the existing Civic Center site. Council has supported that report that then came out of the Urban Land Institute, and our work actually predated what ULI was doing. Mm-hmm. So that we know is moving forward. And the downtown master plan, even though it focused on the immediate areas adjacent to downtown, and primarily to the east, to the west, and then just south of our historic landmark district, there are recommendations in there for the entire community. Mm-hmm. For example, Tied to Town, which is our Savannah's urban trail system, is a recommendation that, again, there's an entire chapter in the downtown master plan that talks about the importance of mobility and connectivity and active alternative transportation, like better biking and walking facilities. And that's exactly what Tied to Town is intended to do. And, you know, as you know, there's it is included in the SPLOST list that we'll be voting on in November. So we're seeing traction move forward on all those. The Canal District is certainly part of the downtown master plan, and the work is continuing on that as we speak.
And you're about to start doing some community engagement projects on the Canal District,
right?
Correct?
Right. So Saturday we have the city's going to be doing the arena groundbreaking on Friday, and then on Saturday there's a community festival that's going to be at City Lot right next to the Waterworks Building at Gwinnett and Stiles, and would love to see all members of the community come. It's from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's going to be a festival type atmosphere, so lots of fun, food, stuff for kids to do, totally drop in at your convenience. Parking will be right off of Gwinnett Street across from City Lot, so would love to see people come there. And if you want to learn more about the downtown master plan, we are going to have SDRA is going to have a presentation of the downtown master plan for the community on September 17th, which is Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. at the Coastal Georgia Center.
Okay.
And this was a request by City Council. They wanted to make sure that the community is aware and informed about the plan. So again, we invite all members of the community to come and learn more about it.
Let's talk about the community engagement process, because Boston, I think it was Boston University, recently came out with a very comprehensive study where they looked at community engagement processes across the country. And what they found is that predominantly community engagement processes are populated by the wealthier people in a community, mm-hmm. primarily white males, and often older white males, mm-hmm. who own their homes and tend to vote. But we know in Savannah that's not our care, that's not our demographic. Mm-hmm. So what are things that we can do as a community to better create a community engagement process where people feel welcome coming into a space, mm-hmm. and that the default of, oh, well, we advertised it and it was on Facebook, mm-hmm. and you can come down to city council chambers, mm-hmm. and talk about it, when that's probably way past the point of no return often on, mm-hmm. a process. What can we do better in incorporating the community and creating facilities that actually address the needs of the community?
Mm-hmm. This is where I think it's really important to think about the scope of the work you're doing and the planning work that you're doing. So, for example, with the Canal District, working with the city of Savannah, you know, the city has had numerous meetings with the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. These are specific neighborhood meetings with the residents and with the community leaders. And there's also been other meetings, like the one that we had a couple weeks ago, to really launch the wider engagement process for the entire community. But that's a recognition of the stakeholders may have different... Depending on the project, you have different layers of stakeholder. I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking for.
Well, they often have competing priorities.
Well, depending, yeah. on the scope of the project, you know, so for the Canal District, for example, by sheer proximity of where the Canal District is located, the neighborhoods and the immediate proximity have a very vested interest in what happens right next door.
Right, and this can heavily transform these historic communities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they're going to have very important and specific issues for their neighborhoods, which have to be addressed in a more intimate context than looking at the Canal District and what it means for the entire city. Mm-hmm. Both are very important, but they have to be dealt with in different ways. And so for the Canal District, we are going into the neighborhoods. We're meeting people where they are. We're meeting with them on their time schedule. For the first Canal District meeting, we had an entire area set aside for the kids and advertised all ages welcome. So tried to make it as accommodating as possible. You know, there are a lot of challenges with community participation. There's no way around it. But it is a two-way street, I believe, mm-hmm. because I do a lot of community engagement, and I will hear, well, I never heard about the meeting. I didn't know this was going on. Do you subscribe to the newspaper? Do you view it online? No. Do you watch the local news? No. Are you a member of your neighborhood association? No. You know, if you want to know what's going on, it takes some effort to be engaged. And so it's great to see things like the Beacon that are really helping to facilitate this dialogue. So it's incumbent upon those that are leading the planning efforts to do everything in our power to make sure we're getting the word out and meeting people where they are. But as responsible citizens, it's also important that our citizenry can be as engaged as possible.
Mm-hmm. And those are some of the discussions we've been having from a writing standpoint, is how do we get people excited about these kind of things? Mm-hmm. Because there's some element of being jaded, mm-hmm. that, well, they're not going to listen to me anyway. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But also that, well, I never got anything in the mail, mm-hmm. when that's not the most cost-efficient way of actually engaging people. But also that you kind of get what you settle for.
Right.
And so the kind of community you have relies heavily on how engaged you are,
right.
and that, you know, don't feel intimidated going into those spaces that, mm-hmm. may seem intimidating just because you may not know what the process is.
Right, right.
That someone will be there to help you learn that process, mm-hmm. and you can have your voice can be heard. Do you involve the kids at all in some of the planning processes to hear some of the things that they like to hear?
Yeah,
because they're ultimately going to be the end users.
Exactly.
By the time these things, like a lot of times, I mean, don't you feel oftentimes you're working on things that you're like, I may never see this fulfilled.
Absolutely.
I'll see parts of it fulfilled, but I'm doing this for the people.
Yeah, you know, that are yet to come.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have this beautiful legacy that we inherited, so it's absolutely incumbent upon us to leave a legacy for our children and our grandchildren that they can be proud of and that's going to give them the same quality of life that we enjoy. So it's absolutely important to engage the younger generation. You know, it can be a challenge with regardless of what demographic you're talking mm-hmm. about. We're living in a society where everyone is the time competition is just continually increasing. So trying to get someone's attention, we live in it used to be a 60 second sound bite. Now I think it's about 5 seconds. These issues are complex and complicated. And so it takes time to be able to really thoughtfully participate.
Because a lot of these neighborhoods have a lot of emotional attachment mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and a lot of history of being cut off
yes.
purposefully
yes.
by the
yes.
very people who are now coming
absolutely.
To them and saying,
absolutely.
So, on behalf of the government, I'm coming to talk to you.
yeah, trust me, I'm here with the government.
Yeah.
There's a lot of past mistakes that have been made that make it very challenging. We do have many communities in Savannah who, as you said, are jaded and rightfully so. They have not been treated equitably. They have not been treated fairly. And unfortunately, many of our, you know, urban renewal projects have had a disproportionate impact on those communities. And so building that trust takes time. It takes effort and it takes intention. And it takes genuine listening skills and understanding perspectives of very diverse communities. And again, meeting people where they are, understanding their point of view, and also, you know, having a conversation and not making false promises. If something can't be delivered on, you know, explain the process, explain how decisions are made. You know, transparency is an important part of that civic conversation and that civic dialogue. And we can't be all things to all people. It just can't happen. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is be respectful and be considerate and to be genuine. And, you know, that's the philosophy that I try and carry forward mm-hmm. in everything that I do and the projects that I'm involved in. And it's not easy. It's not an easy task. But to your point earlier about those that are participating, it's important that those who have not historically been at the table in the past, that we work even harder to bring them to the table now.
How important is, we throw the word vision around a lot, mm-hmm. but how important is it for communities to get behind leadership that has a vision?
I think that what truly makes a good leader, and this is just my opinion, is someone who does have vision and can make the tough choices to make that vision a reality. Leadership takes being able to make some, again, getting back to you can't make everybody happy, but what you can do is make decisions that are responsible in every way, responsible to the people, responsible to our future generations, responsible to our community, to our environment, and work with the community on why that vision reflects who we are as a community now and how it can carry us forward in the future. No idea if that makes any sense at all.
It makes perfect sense. It's like you said, meeting people where they are, but also bringing them along to what can be.
Yes,
and
yes.
That's a hard thing to do.
It's very hard.
If you're not listening,
yes.
If you're standing your ground, if you're, you know, there's a difference between being right and doing the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really easy to naysay something. It's really easy to say, I don't like that. But a lot of times when I'm working with communities, I say, it's fine if you don't like something, but provide an alternative.
Yeah, or you know? Understand or, why you don't.
Or under like exactly. Understanding the why behind it can be so important because that can really help to inform a better path forward,
right.
Understanding the why.
Right, because you could be actually not liking something out of fear or mm-hmm. by a perceived
mm-hmm.
fear.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you can unpack it a bit, you can dispel that fear
and
move people forward.
Absolutely.
But you have to be willing to listen for that fear.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Well, thanks so much for being with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. I appreciate the invitation.
Good stuff there from Amy Condon and Denise Grabowski. Thank you both. Also, thanks to our sponsors, National Office Systems and Freedom Boat Club. They help make this podcast possible, and we encourage you, the listeners, to support them. Listen to new and archived episodes of The Commute at savannahnow.com/podcast or by searching The Commute with @SavannahOpinion on your favorite podcast app. For more engaging local news and opinion content, subscribe to the digital version of the Savannah Morning News. A digital subscription is an incredible value. Free for the first month and just $7.99 a month for a year after that. Take advantage of this special offer by visiting savannahnow.com/digital-only offer. That's savannahnow.com/digital-only offer. The commute returns on Monday.